This is A's Cast Live, your comprehensive look at the Oakland Athletics.
Drive to deep center field. Going back, Hernandez at the track, right to the wall. Gone! Elvis Andrus!
And 29 other MLB clubs.
High drive, deep left field. Nino left the building.
Guerrero lifts one to left field and gone!
Ohtani, that was a moonshot out there in the right center.
Alonso defends his title. The 2021 Derby champion.
Join us as we take you inside the baseball universe, from OPS Plus to juiced balls to game-changing moments. We have you covered. Spend your afternoon with us next from the town, only on A's Cast Live. Here's Chris Townsend.
How is everybody doing here on a Monday? A little A's Cast Live. We have an unbelievable show for you, as always, as we get you ready for the A's and the Seattle Mariners and everything going on in Major League Baseball. Paul Himbakides from ESPN is going to join us coming up here at 4:15. Aaron Goldsmith, who does Mariners TV, will be at 5 o'clock. And what time is the game today?
I believe it's a 6:40 game.
So we'll have A's Total Access at 5:40, presented by
Chevron.
And then we'll get you ready for first pitch. We sure about that, 6:40?
I thought so.
It is a 6:40 first pitch, where we have a couple of left-handers, Zach Lowe going up against Marco Gonzalez. Marco Gonzalez has had a solid career. He's what, Long Beach State?
No, that'd be Gonzaga.
He's a Zag?
He's a Zag, yep. He's a Bulldog.
You sure he's not a dirt bag?
100% sure he went to Gonzaga.
And that would be up against Zach Lowe. So that's what we have going today. You know, we told you, because I didn't know this. I don't remember when I was listening to it. It was the Angels general manager said that they crunched the data. And because a big question for the Angels has been, how are you going to work a six-man rotation? How is that going to work? And will that work? I mean, we went from four-man rotations to five-man. Now we're going to six-man rotations. And obviously everything is to accommodate Shohei Ohtani. And he said, listen, it's really not crazy as you think, because the average team will use 13 different starting pitchers on average. 30 teams, the average amount of starting pitchers will be 13 in a season. And I read today in my notes, wow. Because I thought when I heard that, I went, 13, that just sounds like a lot. Now, 13, we're not talking about it being the most, we're talking about the average. 30 teams, the average is 13 starting pitchers in a year. Well, we now have leaders in the clubhouse who are about to blow that away. Do you know who the leaders are in the clubhouse right now for most starting pitchers used at the, basically, we're at the 40-game poll. What, the A's, this is game number 42?
No, we're 17 and 26, so 40, this is game 44.
So game 44, so everybody's a little bit over the 40 game mark.
Correct.
Who's the leader in the clubhouse?
I'm going to randomly guess the White Sox. Because Johnny Cueto's pitching for them now, so I figured they might be high on the list because they've had injuries.
Nope.
Not the A's.
Nope.
Seattle.
Nope. Do you know who Elvin Rodriguez is? Better known as E-Rod.
Well, that's Eduardo Rodriguez from Detroit. But, no, I'm gonna take this from Friday and tell you I don't know.
I'm glad. You're starting to learn. He was the player to be named later in the August 2017 trade of Justin Upton from the Angels to the Tigers.
Now Seattle Mariner, Justin Upton.
So, E-Rod, Elvin Rodriguez.
How can I forget that trade?
He'll be the 11th different starter for the Detroit Tigers this year, tied with the Rays for the most in the majors. So wherever you got these teams at 42, 43, 44 games, 11 different starters already? We're not even into June. Is it me? I mean, to me, that's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. I mean, they're on pace. They're on pace for what?
Well, see, they're at 11, and what's today's date? May 23rd. And remember, pitchers, the roster reduces at the end of this month from 14 pitches to 13. God, you're looking at maybe 19, 20.
Oh, if they've used 11 already and it's not even June?
I'm being kind to Al Avila and A.J. Hinch there in Detroit. They've had some injuries. Now Scooble's hurt and Mize has been hurt. Eduardo Rodriguez is hurt, their big free agent acquisition.
If you want to bet they'll only use 19, I'll take that bet right, even though we're not allowed to bet. We can bet others. It's not cash. It's dinners.
Like us on the 200 inning thing.
I will bet you it does not end here.
I don't think so either. But I was being kind and saying 19, 20 on the low end.
19? By the way, you know what's a trip? Is in our one camera here in the one angle, this jersey right here, is actually straight, but in the camera angle it looks totally not.
Let me look, because
kid, it is straight. We've used a level.
Yes, it is. I can see what you're saying though. You're talking about the reflection
the
of
the one
we
behind
love Ray.
Me. Yeah,
we love Ray. We love you, Ray. Sign
well,
from
we
our friends
love Ray.
From the last dive bar, our friends.
Sponsor friend. They're not friend of the program. They are a client. The last dive bar.
The lights have taken full effect.
Yes.
Also, thank you, Pitching Ninja, for the hat.
Well, I will get, because we want to give the Pitching Ninjas
his
due.
Yes.
Last Dive Bar, yes, is a client of ours here on A's Cast Live. If you noticed, the hits that I do for NBC Sports California before and after every game, I was wearing the Last Dive Bar shirt on Saturday, giving them the love.
Brian from the Last Dive Bar is actually sending us some new Last Dive Bar swag. So we'll be getting that soon.
And we'll be repping our client right here. This is from the A's team store. We still have to rep the organization as we speak.
Yeah, the team that we work for.
Yes, we still have to rep them. But, yes, Last Dive Bar is officially a client. What is it? Is it lastdivebar.com?
Yes. Yes, lastdivebar.com.
Go buy their merch. Support them, because everything they do, they give back to either the A's Community Fund or – to groups that support the A's Community Fund. Everything they do goes back to charity. So it's not like some of it goes to charity and then stuffing stuff in their pocket. It's all going to charity. So lastdivebar.com. If you're an A's fan, baseball fan, and you care about helping people, help Last Dive Bar, because they're helping the A's Community Fund and they're helping the people in and around our community who are also in support and help the A's Community Fund. Other groups that are a part of it.
Well said, and I have the banner running, as you see it right there, telling everyone where to go, the website, how to find it, lastdivebar.com. Check it out as I'm wearing the Ken Korak Lights Have Taken Full Effect t-shirt.
11 starting pitchers, and we're not even in June. I don't care, openers or not. What's the game going to do? Because you're only allowed so many roster spots, 40-man roster. I mean, is baseball going to really have to just, like, blow up the system as we know it? Now, the collective bargaining agreement was just agreed upon. But at some point, are they really going to have to look around and go, guys, commish, New York, Players Union, Tony Clark, we've got to restructure how we do this. And I know we've had these rules, but the rules aren't going to work because pitchers are dropping like flies and we need pitchers. We need pitching. We need to be able to get guys who can play in the games.
Yeah, guys that can get, wait for it, 4,374 outs over a 162-game season.
But how do we get you to be able to pitch at the big league? Like, sometimes it's like, I gotta call somebody up and say, you got to pitch tonight. But he's not on the 40-man roster, and you got to get rid of a guy on the 40-man. They might have to go scratch all that. Because, like I said, this is the year that people's worst nightmares come true. This is the year there's not enough pitching. They can make whatever excuse. We've heard COVID. We've heard lockout, whatever. The way they've trained pitchers today to not go deep in games, the way guys get hurt, I don't want to say like never before, but guys get hurt at such a rapid rate, you just don't have enough arms to pitch in Major League Baseball. And some nights you're going to need to be able to go, I don't know, grab a dude from Double A. He's not on the 40-man. Well, screw it. He's not on the 40-man. Let's go. We need a guy here. We need a body. I mean, at some point, we need bodies.
And I was listening to Buster Olney's podcast, which Buster Olney will be on the show tomorrow. That's Buster Olney of ESPN. I was listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast, and he was talking with Jeff Passan about, well, of course, the Yankees. But they were talking about how the Yankees relievers are dropping like flies. And if you have a good middle tier to good farm system, you can call up a bunch of guys like the Yankees can. They can just throw in there to pitch innings.
But you just can't call anybody up and put them on the roster. There's a process.
Yeah. You have to DFA guys and trade guys and release
guys. So I'm wondering, do we need to blow up that process and just say, listen, here's the deal. And I know a lot of people won't like this, but here's the deal. If you're in the minor league system, you can be called up.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, you're right. People won't like that. And baseball for sure won't like that because then you start the clock and guys can leave earlier and it becomes a whole thing. One of our fans on YouTube here made a comment, 60-man roster with 30 pitchers. So essentially add 20 more spots and add
I hate it.
17 more pitchers.
I hate it. I really do. But, I mean, what are you going to do? 11 starters already?
Yeah, it's May 23rd.
I mean, serious.
No, I'm going to say this again. They didn't expect Tarik Skubal and Casey Mize and their big free agent acquisition to get hurt. But these things happen. You have to be prepared. And that's why Perry Manassian said every team's going to use, on average, 13 starters. Now, the Yankees have only used 5 starters so far this year. It's been, Cole, Nasty Nestor, Montgomery, Tyone, and I'm forgetting one. Luis Severino, who's pitching great.
They've made
all 5 of those guys have made every start this year for them. So they're one of, I think, I'd have to look, but they're one of the teams that's has only used 5 starters all year.
That's an outlier.
Yeah, but it's what I love to do, outliers.
And I don't listen to outliers. I'll look at the norm, and the norm is you wait. Talk about, what if the A's are going with a 6-man rotation? They talked about that.
They could. I mean, they could.
They talked about that. You got a 6-man rotation, man. How you gonna? Wait, you only have 13 pitchers. You got a 6-man rotation.
It
So once again, I don't deal in outliers. Outliers, that doesn't help you in business. If one guy is doing something, I'm not buying it. Do we have Himbo?
Hear me, gentlemen.
What's up, buddy? How are you?
I am doing outstanding. Enjoying my last few months of freedom, as you well know, my friend.
So we're getting that close to the child.
The children.
Oh, that's right, children. You're having twins. That's right.
I decided that I was going to follow in your footsteps in every way, and that I guess includes my biological footprint as well. So my wife and I are expecting identical girls at the end of September, and so I have between now and then to get my life in order.
Yeah, because the reality is people don't understand. Like, people have one child and they think it's like, oh my God, our lives are upside down. When you have two, or let's just call multiples, because you'll start running into two, people have three. Like, you're like, one kid's easy. You know how easy having one child is compared to having two? And then the other thing is, like, you'll understand is, like, you go from having no kids, you have a dog, right?
We have a dog.
Yeah,
Chase, named after Chase Utley.
And you think, oh, the dog's your pet. Your dog's your kid. No. You go from having 0 kids to 2 kids. It's constant feeding. It's constant diapers. Boy, the next 2.5-3 years, my friend. You better get that book done now.
You got me all choked up just thinking about this. Look, at some point in the summer, we've got to do like a full like advice column where I just like sort of bring, I don't know, like 20 burning questions that I have about all of this. And I'm just going to rifle them off at you, and you're going to provide me your valued experience. Are you on board with such a thing?
Most importantly, I will take everything you send me, because if anybody did it right, my wife did it right. She had them both sleeping through the night. They were on such a structure, feeding, diapers, just
let's go.
She was, it was, everybody else was like, it was a train wreck with twins. My wife had this thing down to a science. I just followed it. I was you're in trouble because I end up being the nighttime guy. You have a morning show being on Get Up. I don't know.
Yeah.
You're basically going to come home, not sleep, and you got to take the kids, all of the babies, all the way up to when you need to go to sleep.
I've been waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning ever since I was working on Mike and Mike. I wonder if my experience not sleeping much and waking up at the wee hours will help me in this case.
Totally.
Or if there's just really no preparation here. It was described to me earlier. Like, if you're having a kid, a storm is rolling through. You can withstand the storm. You're having two at the same time. You're walking into a tornado willingly. and it is my job now to emerge unscathed. That's the analogy that was provided to me.
Yeah, but you know what? Here's the thing. After about 2.5 to 3 years, you're golden, because now they play together. And that's where it really becomes tough for people who just have one, and then they have a second one, and now you have a baby and a toddler. And when you have twins, they end up being buddies. They play together. You just got to get through the first 2.5, 3 years, and then it's money in the bank.
3 years is quite the timeline. I guess.
No, trust me. It'll be like that.
Yeah, I'll sit down, I'll watch one World Series game, and then it will have arrived. That time will have arrived.
All right, let's start with the A's today. You've done some research, and I'm very surprised your research has said that the A's offense isn't very good.
The A's lineup is not very good. I have to remember that I'm here talking on the flagship station, but there was a legendary manager, I forget who it was that said it, but it was something to the effect of my team could take BP in a ballroom and not break anything. that's the yearbook photo right now for the 2020 Oakland A's, as far as I'm concerned. The numbers are obviously staggering. You guys know them as well as I do.
Yeah.
But the 586 OPS through Sunday is the worst figure at the quarter mark of any team since the 1972 Rangers. That team, in addition to having a number of players whom I've never heard of, went 54 and 100. And if you want to think about it, like, in just in terms of the collective batting line, right now the A's weighted runs created plus. That's on a scale in which 100 is average. That's 77. It's 23% below average. A staggering figure when you consider a team, just for example, like the 03 Red Sox, loaded, right? Like, Hall of Fame hitters up and down it. They were 20% above the league average. So your lineup is, like, that's sort of the disparity there. Like, that's right now, at least, that's how bad this team is hitting. And if I have to say, just sort of looking from the outside, the one player who I thought would really hit this year that hasn't so far is Sean Murphy. This is a guy who I've had in my fantasy team the last couple of years, and is a player that I've really gotten on board with in addition to Ramon Laureano. I just see, like, the slugging declining in every single season. I'm not seeing the same bat to ball that we saw early in his career. And this is a player whom I thought, coming into the season, had a chance to emerge as a top 10 player at the position. Look, you're not going to fix the lineup with a single guy getting hot. But that's one player in particular that I would say I was expecting a lot more from this season.
And if you think all of what you said is bad, I got to keep score for every game.
I heard it suggested that the A's, you guys should actually rename yourself Murderer's Row, because teams that watch the A's this year want to inflict harm on themselves. Look, I think it will turn around. I really do. Because there are enough potential in that lineup with guys whom I do believe in. What you wonder, though, is if guys get hot and they decide to ship them away and continue to buffer the minor league system, you guys are just sort of in for it. I sort of feel for you. This is the sort of stage in which that teams that operate in sort of your financial world have to go through. The Orioles are dealing with it as well. It's one of those things that's just tough for the fan base to try to reconcile day after day. And look, you guys are living it.
Yeah, well, if I had to bet on anybody getting hot and being traded, good luck on that one. you want to bring up Manny Machado, 10 hits in his last 19 ABs, hitting .526. He's leading everybody in average on base. He's tops in the National League in slugs, so his OPS fantastic. I don't know how many people are paying attention. Obviously, you are. I mean, Manny Machado, is this the year he finally gets the MVP?
He might. So right now, that slash is 374, 446, 619. What I'm going to do for you is read a comprehensive list of third basemen to ever lead their league in average, on-base, and slugging in a single season, which Manny Machado is on pace to do. The entirety of that list is Miguel Cabrera in 2013, the year after his Triple Crown season in which he won back-to-back MVPs, and George Brett in 1980. That's the list. It's never happened once in the history of the National League, and he's doing it without Fernando Tatis Jr. Look, I'll be honest. This is a player I was wrong about. When the Padres signed him, I didn't think it would be a sunk cost, but I thought they were paying a premium talent, like sort of a premium dollar on a player that was not a premium talent. But he's demonstrating that he absolutely has it all in his bag right now because he plays plus defense. He hasn't turned 30 yet. 48 WAR, 250 homers, nearly 1,500 hits. Dude, this guy's a freaking Hall of Famer. Like, this guy's going to be – like, if he's able to just stay healthy, which he does better than anyone else in the sport, he's going to freaking get there someday. And if you look at just in totality, the value he's produced since he joined that club, Fangraphs has a metric that they call dollars, which just sort of estimates what a player's would be worth on the open market given the value they produced. He's been worth about $100 million in 410 games, all right? This is an example of a mega contract paying off in a big way. We know sometimes you lose the sort of the back end there, but right now this guy is in the smack dab middle of his prime, and it would not surprise me at all if he stayed hot enough to win the MVP this year, especially when Tatis gets back in that lineup.
Interesting conversation going on in baseball because Juan Soto has, what, 3 years left? You don't have to pay him now, but – if you want him long-term, you're going to have to pay him, but we'll even take the deal. He's a Boris guy. Boris is going to want to get this guy to free agency to get the biggest contract that we've ever seen in baseball history. The Nationals are up for sale. We don't know what the new owners want. The new owners may say, hey, listen, trade him now. We don't want to deal with the headache. Or they might say, sign him because we don't want to lose him. Will this be one of the most interesting free agents, not only because as a player, but all the business stuff going around him at the same time in our nation's capital?
Fascinating. I think this is a fascinating thought experiment on a couple fronts. Parenthetically, given his age, Juan Soto's 23, and given his skill set as a prodigious hitter, as literally the Ted Williams of his generation, it is my opinion that if Juan Soto were traded this summer, he would be the best player, or at least the most valuable player, most valuable asset traded since Babe Ruth in 1920. That might sound crazy, right? Frank Robinson was traded. Miguel Cabrera was traded. Any number of great players were traded. But you don't see guys this talented, traded this young, ever. I think you have to go back that far to find that context. And frankly, thus, there is absolutely no precedent for trading for a player as good as and as young as Juan Soto. So that's sort of one side of things. The other side of things is that if I'm interested in buying a baseball team, in this case, the Washington Nationals, and I know with a high degree of certainty that Juan Soto does not want to stay, you know what I'm not doing? Buying the baseball team. Look, if I have that much money, I want to watch Juan Soto wear my laundry and hit for my team for the next 15 years. That's what I want. And I'm willing to give him $500 million in order to do it. But I'm not that interested in owning the Washington Nationals if Juan Soto is not playing right field for me and is not batting, you know, in the top third of my lineup. I'm just not. It reminds me a lot of when Derek Jeter was looking to be a part of the ownership group to buy the Marlins. We know, like, would you trade Giancarlo Stanton was a massive question mark on the front end of it. And I think soured in a lot of minds his sort of start to his ownership tenure there. And I'm not sure he ever quite got over it, even though I think the deal has been proven to be good because they shed that salary. So on a multitude of fronts, this is fascinating. What do you got for me?
Teacher, can I speak?
Please.
Is Juan Soto a great player? No question. Can I go from the business standpoint of it?
Hit me. Yeah, hit me.
Juan Soto walks down the street, no one even knows who he is. That's not Tiger Woods. That's not Tom Brady. That's not LeBron James. That, I mean, from a money standpoint, a guy could go out. I mean, Babe Ruth put butts in the seats. Babe Ruth saved the sport. Juan Soto doesn't put butts in the seats. Granted, he's a great offensive player, and he's probably doesn't get hurt, going to be a Hall of Famer, whatever. He will never be the face of baseball. He's a great player who walked down the street, I mean, you want where? Oh, he could be worth $500 million for what? You're gonna sell jerseys for? I mean, how am I gonna get my return on investment from this guy? Explain to me from a biz. Don't tell me about his. Oh, he matches Ted Williams. Don't tell me about his baseball numbers. Tell me from a business standpoint how he's worth $500 million.
Well, I think by using that standard of measure, which parenthetically I don't disagree with, there is no player in baseball then that would measure up, because what you just described is not a Juan Soto problem. It's not a Mike Trout problem. It's not a Fernando Tatis problem. It's a baseball problem.
No, Soto, I totally disagree, because you know what baseball is now? It's a content provider. Baseball's value is the fact that we got 162 games and the Amazons, Apple, Peacock, NBC, Hulu, they need content and they're willing to spend $1 billion, and they don't care who's playing, they just need the content. So whether you're Mike Trout, you're Manny Machado, you're Juan Soto, you're whoever, do you really matter anymore? Your value, just like the NFL, doesn't matter if Tom Brady's playing or not. You can have the Cleveland Browns playing whoever on Thursday Night Football and they get ratings. You're a content provider. That's what baseball has to offer now. Individual guys, you are who you are. You're in the TV business, right?
Right. I'm approaching this, though, from the perspective of a front office. You're approaching it from the position of what Scott Boras or ownership might be talking about.
Yeah.
Because that's obviously on a whole nother level. What I'm telling you is that I think Juan Soto is a generational hitter. And when you consider what others like him make, that's what he deserves. Now, I think you could also very reasonably argue that there is no player in baseball more unworthy of the talent that he has been given than Mike Trout, who no one knows who he is. And we know that for sure. Does that mean he's not worth $400 million? I suppose reasonable minds might differ. But I'm saying is, if you can't give Juan Soto $500 million, then there's just no one in baseball that can get close to it. That's all. And if we want to have that discussion and sort of suppress wages because he can't provide the content and put butts in the seats the same way that Babe Ruth did or any other great player of yesteryear, then I'm here for it. But I think when you consider the on-field output there is no question. That guy's on the fast track to the Hall of Fame.
I mean, I just think about your payroll, one guy. I mean, even with Trout. I mean, the fact that they've now surrounded Trout and things are getting better for the Angels. But, I mean, how many times in baseball have you broke the bank for one guy and it's really worked?
Yeah, and in fairness, I think if you know for sure Juan Soto's not coming back and Scott Boras tells you as much, then the smart thing to do is to shop him around to get heaven and earth moved for him, to hit the reset button on your program and hope that it yields you a dynasty. That's obviously the right thing to do. That's probably what smart baseball tells you should do. In the case of Soto, though, you're going to be able to buy up so many prime years that it's not obvious to me that that's going to be a sunk cost. Will it compromise the rest of your roster? Sure. There's definitely that chance. But we know that in Washington, they have been willing to approach, if not exceed, the luxury tax threshold when they do put butts in the seats.
Yep.
Right now, the reason they're not putting butts in the seats is because the rest of the team around him stinks. I'm not putting that on Juan Soto.
When do you do it?
Like, ASAP.
Forget. I mean, Mike Rizzo's in the last year of his deal, and this is really above him. This is one family's trying to sell. They're going to sell to whether it's a family or a corporation, whatever. These decisions really are made way above everybody's pay grade. But let's say it's not. When do you sell him? Do you sell him now? Off season? I mean, you still have a couple cycles before you have to actually sell him.
Yeah, the answer to that question is probably ASAP, because you're not going to be good. Look, you're not going to be good within the life of his pre-arb years, right? In all likelihood. And the way that you can recoup the most value is by trading him when he can affect the most pennant races. Like that, the more days Juan Soto's in your organization, the more value I have to provide you. I think Miguel Cabrera was traded at 24. Now, prospects will break your heart. So I've always been a fan, if you're going to trade Juan Soto, I need big league talent back. I need guys who I know for sure can play, not guys I think can play. That makes a big difference in that sense. But look, if the decision has been made, I don't see any obvious reason for him to be putzing around, taking walks in front of 17,000 fans in that jungle, there's no obvious reason for that. And I'm with you. But if you're gonna make that decision, I think sooner than later, because that's your opportunity to attract premium value.
I am so curious. You have a new crush. Who is that?
My new crush is Shane McClanahan. All right, the lefty stud, 25-year-old from the Rays.
Yeah.
And look, this is going to sound ridiculous, but I'm going to say it anyway and duck. I think there's a chance. I think there is a real chance that he is going to be the hardest throwing left-handed starting pitcher of all time. Of all time. Now, look, we know that Randy Johnson could touch triple digits. We know Sandy Koufax could throw a ball through a, you know, through a door, et cetera. There are any number of great pitchers who we know threw hard. What we know now, based upon a high degree of certainty, is that modern pitchers throw harder than they ever did before, in part because they're not asked to throw as often. You know, Shane McClanahan's not asked to get 27 outs in a given game. But what we know for sure is that no starting pitcher in the pitch tracking era throws as hard as he does. He's sitting 96.9 this year, unprecedented for a left-handed starter. And we know that his sort of suite of curveball, slider, changeup plays off of it. And right now the league is batting 121, 136, 181 against it. I'm so impressed with that program. I'm so impressed with this kid. And I think pitch for pitch, he throws as hard as any lefty starter I've ever seen.
You think it's sustainable?
No. Are you kidding? This kid's going to have to get surgery twice probably. But look, look, this is the nature of the business. If you want to have your young, you know, your kids in your one in their young 20s blowing cheese, right? And maxing out through 5 innings, and you're going to have to deal with the consequences. I love the arm. I actually think Shane Baz, who's, you know, the righty in their system,
yeah,
who's going to be coming up shortly, is even more talented. These guys just replenish better than any team in the sport. I don't think the A's are too far behind the Rays right now and getting back up there. I think it's just going to take them a year or two. But right now, the premium talent the Rays have on that roster is just ridiculous. I mean, this kid's 25. He's sitting 97, and he's probably going to be the second best pitcher on that roster next year. What they're doing is just silly.
You know, it reminds me of former A, former Ray. I guess he'd be a Devil Ray, would be Scott Kazmir. If you remember, Scott Kazmir was just blowing smoke left-handed when he was with the Rays, uh-huh, and then all of a sudden, but came back, went to the Sugarland Skeeters, learned how to pitch, and became an all-star with the A's. And that's the thing, that if you've got a guy that's a fireballer as a left-hander and then loses it, you got a better chance that he can still be good with his breaking stuff, off-speed stuff, moving the ball around as a left-hander, than you really do as a right-handed guy who's all about fastball. He loses it. Most of the time, he's done. With the lefty, he can learn to dial back and pitch and still win games for you.
I agree. And the thing that impressed me about this kid is that not only is he sitting 97, is that he has a legit four-pitch mix. He is, at last check, he was one of three pitchers this year that threw at least 100 changeups, curveballs, and sliders. I mean, think about that. This kid's a 25-year-old starter, still getting his feet wet in the big leagues, and he's commanding four pitches. You just don't see it very often. So I don't know, like, what kind of sustainability this has, but I know, like, if I'm facing the Rays and, like, that, you know, the best of three wild card round, I want nothing to do with the kid, nothing to do with him.
All right, so we saw him early this season, and by the way, his arm, you're just like, wow, that's, I mean, God touched this
vicious
kid. There's yeah, no question about that. You did not like this big debut for the Orioles. Number one pick, Oregon State. What was the problem? I did a whole thing on it about his first game, got a base hit. Old Adley comes to town, and what did you have a problem with?
Well, aside from him obviously now being immediately better than Mickey Cochran and any number of Hall of Fame catchers that have gone before him, my big problem with it is that the Orioles elected to give him number 35. Now, in case you're not intimately familiar with the Baltimore Orioles uniform number assignments, Mike Mussina wore number 35. Mike Mussina wore number 35 for the better part of 10 years with the Orioles. Mike Mussina is in the Hall of Fame, naturally does not have his number retired, you know, with the Orioles for some inexplicable reason. And in some sense, I think you could probably argue, given the fact that they're giving number 35 to their stud catcher, and that they're conceding the opportunity to ever retire Mike Mussina's number, which is, to me, categorically outrageous. So I grew up, I was born in Baltimore and was a fan of the team until I was about 10 years old. Mike Mussina was the first great pitcher I ever really enjoyed watching. He's the second best pitcher in the history of the franchise behind Jim Palmer. It is absurd if they're still harboring ill feelings from Mike Mussina for leaving to go pitch for the Yankees. Totally absurd. And I was able to actually go back and find that since the year 1940, there are 106 instances in which a Hall of Fame player spent at least 10 seasons with a team, as Mike Mussina did. 100 of those players have had their number retired. Mussina is one of six that haven't, and others on that list include Jim Cott, who just got into the Hall of Fame, that's going to get his number retired this year. Gil Hodges, whom you can say the same about. Joe Morgan, who is much more associated with the Reds than the Astros. In other words, there's just very little precedent, if none, frankly, for a team acting in this kind of way to a Hall of Famer in their midst. It's just sort of bizarre. Like, I'm as excited about Adley Rutschman as everyone else, although the hype sort of nauseated me to a small degree. Although, look, I mean, what else do the Orioles have to root for this year, aside from watching 400 footballs in the left field, you know, die in the warning track? But look, Mike Mussina's number should be retired. That's what I'm saying.
I'm wondering, and you know, the Peter Angelos crew that was there when Mussina was there, I don't know what the turnover is. I mean, we hardly deal with the Orioles all that much. How many of the Angelos people are still there? Because they would be the only ones that would be still mad that he went to New York, right? If there's a new crop, why would they care?
Yeah, but all it takes is one. All it takes is one, and they can get passed down easily enough. Look, I don't know if this was done intentionally or not, but it seems kind of obvious to me. There's 99 other options. Like, let's be sensible with our choice here. Another example from this list of mine is the Mariners. Randy Johnson used 51. So did Ichiro. They'll retire that number someday too. So, like, look, and in other words, any Hall of Famer that made a contribution of this size has gotten their number retired, flat out. So to me, there's just no obvious reason why the Orioles would elect to do this. I think it makes them look petty. I think it makes them look stupid. And I think Mike Mussina is a player worthy of recognition. And if there's any, you know, sort of ill will or hard feelings over something that happened in 2000, like, I think you guys got to get over yourself.
Trevor Story, a.k.a. Carl Crawford, is starting to hit now for the Bo Sox. But Xander Bogaerts, what do you got on him?
So I would describe Xander Bogaerts as brilliantly boring, or perhaps boringly brilliant, if that's even a word.
And you know what? And by the way, as someone, when you cover a team every single day, you love that guy.
Yeah, Xander Bogaerts can hit with his eyes closed. I mean, what we have now is a durable track record that say this guy is just a great hitter and there's no way around it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read for you the entire list of players to do each of these last two things over the last five seasons. Again, a durable sample size here. Hit 300, slug 500. If you can do one, you're a good hitter. If you can do both, you're a great hitter. The list is this: Mike Trout, Freddie Freeman, Xander Bogaerts. That's the list, okay?
Wow.
So we're talking about a player. That's the list. We're talking about a player who has a premium bat, who can fake it in the middle of the diamond, who can easily move to third base or second base and potentially play gold glove defense as soon as they decide to do that. And regardless of what Trevor Story has done in the last week, if he got 140, Bogaerts is worth 280. Trevor Story is not half the ball player Xander Bogaerts is. Look at what the Rangers just gave Marcus Semien, Marcus Semien, by the way, would fit great in the A's lineup this year. But look at what they just gave Marcus Semien, 175. Xander Bogaerts is, at-bat for at-bat, game for game. That guy's Manny Machado good. In fact, he's a little better, just a little bit better. We're talking about a long period of time in which he has been healthy, on the field. This guy had 85 extra base hits at a shortstop in 2019. He's a freaking great hitter. Look at the contract Mike Trout plays on, and look at the contract Freddie Freeman plays on. Xander Bogaerts is, for my money, worth in excess of $200 million, and you could make a cogent argument that he's worth closer to three.
Now, are we talking Marcus Semien with the A's or Blue Jays would fit good in the A's lineup, or the Marcus Semien with the Texas Rangers right now?
I mean, Marcus Semien would be your cleanup hitter right now.
Is he up to 160 yet? Where is Marcus right now?
He is legitimately, I was doing the research last
horrible
week. He was the worst hitter in baseball among qualifiers. I mean, just, like, but look, this is my,
he's hitting 182. Yeah, actually, he'd fit right in. It sounds like an Oakland A already.
Yeah. I mean, he leads the league in ERA through his batting average. So look, here's my thing on big contracts, not to go off on a spiel here. If I'm giving someone a nine-figure contract, I need to know one of two things. A, you're a pitcher that could go to the Hall of Fame someday. Or B, you can hit with your eyes closed. Marcus Semien has had two above-average hitting seasons in his major league career, and he got $175 million. Ancillary skills don't last. Fielding doesn't matter. running doesn't matter. Intangibles don't matter when over the course of a long period of time in which attrition is going to happen and noisiness is going to affect the way that you can do those kinds of things. What matters is, can you hit? Can you get the barrel to the baseball, and can you control the strike zone? And in the case of Marcus Semien, the answer, at least by and large, if you look at his career in totality, is kinda, but it's not, you know, it's most definitely not $175 million. Yes, that's what he got. That might wind up being one of the worst contracts ever.
Can I ask you a talk shop inside ESPN question?
Yeah, hit me.
All right, with the Golden State Warriors about to go to the NBA Finals, does ESPN allow you guys to talk basketball since LeBron James is not in the postseason? That's hard hitting. Look, right there.
Hey, listen. You're coming at the wrong show, because today we snuck in the Lakers today because Juwan Howard turned them down. All right, so you are – look, you're barking up the wrong tree here. The Lakers were in the rundown yesterday. And I'd be willing to bet that we find a way to get the Lakers in the rundown tomorrow. Ye of little faith, don't you doubt the Get Up production crew.
How many times did you mention Tom Brady today?
Only a dozen.
Yeah.
You know? It's May. What do you expect? We can't do the whole show on Brady.
Got to get Brady. Got to get LeBron. And really, it's not really Lakers anymore. It's just, where is LeBron?
And Marcus Semien, like, we're just going down the list here, making sure we hit all the stars. We said hit all the stars.
All right. So here's what you need to do. You just need to make a list of questions that you have about twins, basically from the hospital to the house, getting started, how to swaddle, how to get them to go to bed every night. I will have my wife was the twin whisperer. I will have everything that you need.
I appreciate that very much. Before you let me go, I don't know how much more time we have, but I did have a bone to pick with your producer, the esteemed Cody Elias.
Oh, by the way, when you said Mike Mussina and retired jersey, you're talking about a man who is very good friends with Ben McDonald. So this is – you want to talk about great Oriole. The fact that you didn't bring up Big Ben, it offends him.
Honestly, Cody, I'm offended that friend of Ben McDonald is not the eighth line in your email signature. So to take everyone –
I didn't have enough room
here for just a moment. If you don't mind,
what camera angles are we on right now?
We have the one with me back in it.
By the way, what do you think of the set?
I don't know. I'm seeing you twice, and I'm seeing Cody once, and that's bad all the way around.
What do you think of all the A's, Chotskis, and jerseys? And
I think it has a lot of potential. I like the desk. I think the wall has room for improvement. I think there needs to be a Traeger ad somewhere, though, so that you can find some sponsors.
Right here?
There,
right
directly
here?
Behind you. Yeah.
All right.
It'll hashtag Sunday Smoke or something. But has Cody filled you in on this bone I have to pick with him?
Yeah, something about his signature on his email.
Just quickly here. So this is a pet peeve of mine, and then I'll finally let you guys go and be done with listening to me rant and rave. So in a corporate setting, like, it's common to have an email signature in which you put your name, your contact information, and generally speaking, something that you do. In the case of Cody, Cody's email signature is seven lines long.
Seven?
It includes 22 data points. So, like, if you go to Cody Elias's email, he has his name, his position, his cell, the Oakland A's listed as if we don't know that, the name of the stadium, Oakland Coliseum, with the address in case someone wants to mail him something, and then hyperlinks to the web, tickets, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. Cody, has there ever been an instance in the history of your emailing time with the A's that someone has examined your email and then checked the A's LinkedIn page?
let me take a second to retort.
Yeah.
Now, when I first joined the organization in 2019, I copied what everyone else was doing on their email signatures, and they all had all those data points on there, so I just did the same thing. And then I never thought to myself, that is really long. And then you brought up – you're the first person that has ever mentioned it to me. Now I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take this off. I ended it where it just says Oakland Athletics. Although, if I'm sending you an email from the – wait for it – celias@athletics.com, I'm sending it to you from the Oakland Athletics, so I should probably take that off as well.
Chris, one more thing.
I'm looking at it now. Yeah, so, like, if anybody looks at your email, like, they're really going to go, oh, I'm going to click on the Instagram page. Like, what?
I don't know. Maybe people want to see
photos. Beyond that.
And then why do you have all the World Series years on here?
Everyone does.
Really?
Yeah, listen, most people in the organization have that same signature.
Hey, Himbo, ctownsend@athletics.com. I got nothing. You just get,
listen,
you get, you may get a sentence out of me.
How, Cody, are you taking credit for the 1911 championship? Like, are you on Connie Mack's staff? This is unbelievable. You have 9 years listed. You have 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, you have all the years listed of your World Series championships. Like, are you getting $100,000 infield shares? Like,
what year were you born?
1988.
He was barely born for what he was born for the 89. He was born in 88. Not all the rest of World Series. He wasn't even born.
This thing is absolutely outrageous. So what we need to do, Cody, is trim the fat to a large degree. Now, obviously, this gives me the opportunity to apply for a job on the A's LinkedIn page, because it seems that the IT group needs some assistance here. But look, I just found this to be utterly obnoxious, and the fact that you're claiming any credit for the 1910 World Series is just beyond me.
Hey, you know what's going to be the best is when I make him put, when your book comes out, we're going to put a link to your book on his
we need a 23rd item. I'm going pretty slowly, but I will have some news to share hopefully at some point in the near
future. I mean, seriously, how long have we been talking about this book?
I started working on it in earnest 2.5 years ago.
There's one thing that he and I go, if there's one topic on this show that we go rabbit hole, it's Hall of Fame. We've been waiting for your book.
Well, I think it's going to be a little while longer. I think my interrupt in September is going to be a big reason why that book might come out years later than expected.
Well, I just want to know when you do it, let me know how my good friend Eddie Collins has done over his career, because, you know, I was there for all those World Series.
Yeah, Joe McGinnity has any stake in the game here. So you guys are the best.
Well, I mean, when you're talking Lefty Grove, I mean, we could go all day.
Well, by the way, my favorite Connie Mack fact of all time, Connie Mack and Vin Scully actually had one overlapping season in baseball in 1950. Vin Scully would wind up broadcasting for the next 67 years. Connie Mack was born during the Civil War. He overlapped with Vin Scully for the first whatever it was, like for this incredibly long period of time, 100 some years, whatever it was. One of those two guys that's in baseball.
I mean, you grew up in Philly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine in the height of summer and the humidity, Connie Mack day games wearing a 3-piece suit?
I want to see Kotze do that. Like, the A's and the Phillies played at the very start of the season, so he missed the chance there. But I feel like that needs to be done. Like, that needs to be, you know, when all the teams were in the throwback unis. Like, I want to see, because, I mean, it's ridiculous. So many of these managers look very unflattering in baseball pants. So, I mean, you might as well go 3-piece top hat and do it properly. Because, like, honestly, not everyone can look like Joe Girardi. Like, by the end, Joe Torre was looking raggedy, bro. Like, I don't want to see him wearing this. Like, he doesn't, like, I don't want to see cellulite on my manager. and that's what we were getting there by the end, poor guy.
Hembo, you are the best, my friend. You be well. We always appreciate the time. And seriously, send me those questions. I'll get them all answered for the Twins. And let us know as we get closer, because you know you got to get a special present from your friends here on A's Cast Live.
You got it. And for their 10th birthday, perhaps I'll send you a copy of my book, which will be done in 8 years.
And then next thing you know, you'll come on again for the second book once they graduate from school.
Which I won't be able to afford.
Take care.
Peace.
The great Paul Himbakides from Get Up on ESPN, top researcher, now a longtime talent. He's the best. I've missed him.
Me too. I'm glad we're able to get him back. And if he writes that book, I'll put up my signature line for a day just for him.
I got it up right now. I can't believe you got web, tickets, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram. That is all on your email signature. He's right.
I know, but if you look at a lot of the other people in the organization that send emails, they have it too.
Okay. Really? David Rinetti.
Well, you're not going to get on that one. That's a meeting invite.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I have email. All right, how about Greg from sales? I won't say his last name. All he has is his name, what he works in, number, and email.
Well, I don't know why the email's in there, but because you're sending it, wait for it, from your A's email.
That's what he has. I'm going to try. Where is the great – I recently got an email from Dave Cavill. Where is the great Dave Cavill?
Look, okay, I'm looking at someone that works in community. Look at their email chain. Oakland Athletics, the email, the address for the Coliseum, the –
All right, here's somebody I don't even know.
How to get tickets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, as Hembo mentioned.
Here's somebody who doesn't have anything. All right, let's see Charlie. Let's see it. Charlie has what you're – yeah, all right. Some people do. So, I mean, they've gone all – I don't know what this is. There's only one that matters, so I'm going to look up the great Dave Cavill. That is the leader of the ship. What does – all right, new signings, an email from Dave Cavill. Dave Cavill didn't even have a signature on his email. It just says, play ball, Dave.
I know. Maybe he takes it off on emails he sends to everyone.
So Dave and I are the two employees for the A's. We do not have a signature on our email.
Well, that's – I guess you would say you guys are in the minority then of everyone who has one. Along with I changed mine.
Do you think it's weird when I send people emails that there's just it's just an email from ctownsend@athletics.com?
No, because – well, maybe because if they've never met you and you're sending emails, they're like, who's C. Townsend?
Yeah, who?
So if you put on there, like, what your title is or what you do, maybe they can – oh, like, here, I'll look you up in the media guide.
Do you think there are people that work for us who have no clue who I am?
Probably.
Yeah, I'd bet on that too.
Because I don't know how to work in the organization.
Whoa. I know everybody because we're one big happy family. We got more coming up next. We're going to be heading to Seattle. Remember when Seattle was the chic pick to win it all? Not so fast, my friend, right here on A's Cast Live.
The Coliseum has gone by many names, but none better than The Last Dive Bar. Hi, everyone. Ken Korak here, and my friends at Last Dive Bar are helping us celebrate our longtime home. Last Dive Bar has the most unique merchandise for all Oakland baseball fans. T-shirts, sweatshirts, the Ray Fosse line, and my personal favorite, the lights have taken full effect. Visit their website at lastdivebar.com or follow them on social media at Last Dive Bar. All proceeds are invested back into the A's Community Fund and their affiliated charities. Go to lastdivebar.com. That's Last Dive Bar.
Streaming from the East Bay, A's Cast Live continues with Chris Townsend.
Bump. How do we decide the tunes for the show?
I'm the one who picks them, actually.
Because it's a whole different art form now because of... Do we call it licenses? What is it about artists like?
Yeah.
They will battle you.
Yeah, something like that's a lot for video, but for any more with the stuff we've been doing with Ace Cast, I pick all the music from a site that the team subscribes to.
Nice.
So we shouldn't have any issues with any licensing or anything like that. So I pick all the music. Although we did have the B-52s, if you remember, because our old board op, Ben, went to Europe to watch the B-52s.
No, he worked with them.
Yeah, that's right. He worked with them and got them to record liners for us.
His band was one of the opening acts for the B-52s.
Yeah. That was pretty awesome.
All right, so if you run down the tail of the tape here, A's are 28th in runs, 29th in homers, 30th in average. By the way, there's only 30 teams. Do you know that?
There's no expansion teams yet?
No, there's only 30 teams. They're 30th in average, 30th in on base, 30th in slug, 30th in OPS. And then you go down to the Mariners, who, by the way, they stink, and their run differential is minus 26. And the Mariners, they're kind of respectable. 8th in runs, 8th in dingers. Let me see, 8th in runs, 4th in dingers, 4th in the American League. 4th in – all that for 30th was in baseball, obviously. For American League, it's 8th in runs, 4th in the AL in dingers, Ks, 8th in average, 8th in OPS. Not bad. Middle of the pack.
We know we'll have to ask Aaron. Well, Aaron Goldsmith from the Mariners when he comes on. What's their fun differential this year? That was a big thing for Scott Service last year. I haven't seen a fun differential number yet this year.
That's something that I've talked with Billy Bean about for years, because it's like, okay, everybody gets so into certain things. What can you really just simply look at? And Billy Bean has always said, run differential. And I know David Forst is big into run differential. And essentially run differential is how many runs do you score and how many does the opponent score against you? You want to be in the plus. You want to score more than they do, right? And if you score less, you're probably not going to have a good year. Well, the Mariners were an anomaly last year where they had a minus 51 and won 90 games, leading to Scott Servais to say,
they have a great fun differential, which I believe was plus 90.
Because everybody was trying to say, wait a minute, how are you guys winning 90 games? Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and you look at them this year. Now, you know, they added Julio Rodriguez, who's batting cleanup today. So it'll be great to see the, like, uber prospect since their biggest high prospect since maybe A-Rod. He's batting cleanup for
them. No. Kelnick was supposed to be. Are you kidding me?
Well, he's in the minors
right now. Oh, my God. Kelnick is not going to be with the team. They're messing with his service time. And I'm against the service time thing. But Kelnick turned out to be a dud.
Yeah, he's in the AAA right now, Tacoma.
Remember how much time we spent on, this is wrong. Yeah. Kelnick should be here.
But now Julio Rodriguez is batting cleanup tonight. It's awesome. I'm excited to watch him play. But, Aaron's here. If we want to, we can get his thoughts on the Mariners.
Is he here already?
He is.
Oh, he's at the ballpark.
What's up, guys?
How are you?
What do you mean? What do you mean? I'm at the surprise. The game's in 2 hours.
I you know what?
Time you think I'm rolling here.
Once the A's go on the road, we go into home studio mode, and everything for us is like, you're at home. Life's great for us.
I see. I understand.
How are you?
Doing great. How about you guys?
We're doing well. We were just talking about how, like, last year, the run differential and Scott Servais ended up talking about the fun differential. And it was amazing how the Mariners won 90 games with a run differential of minus 51, now struggling this year, and the run differential at minus 26. What have you been seeing with the ball club?
Yeah, you know, the reason why it worked last year in terms of the run differential and the Mariners still being able to win 90 games, it really was not a great formula, but it can work for a season, which it did for the Mariners, which is you win close games. The Mariners were really very good last year in 1 and 2 run games. But then oftentimes when they lost, maybe once every 10 games, maybe once every 2 weeks, they got boat raced. So you win close ones and you lose big a handful of times a month, and that really skews the run differential, obviously. But for the Mariners this year, the bullpen has not been the rock that it was last year. No matter what was going on with the ball club last season, Scott Servais knew that he had a top-tier bullpen. He had a deep bullpen. He had 3 to 4 guys that he could trust in the ninth inning in a save situation. And because of whether it be injuries or lack of performance or both, that has not been quite the same this year, and it's had a big impact on the ball club for sure.
I don't know if you filled out your book yet, but if you have and you start writing down all the A's numbers and you start looking at the averages and the numbers, is it shocking to you to see just really how low and how bad everything is?
Yeah, I mean, I was hearing what you guys were saying a few minutes ago. Someone has to be last, right? Like, someone has to be the lowest scoring team.
There's only 30.
Somebody's got to be first. Somebody's got to be last. It's ugly, man. Like, it's really ugly right now for the A's. It's, I don't know, maybe it's not a surprise given how much turnover there was and how much talent is now gone. But it's a bad-looking lineup, man. I don't have to tell you guys. The Mariners have struggled offensively this month in particular. But even the most cynical Mariners fan, I would hope, would be able to say, hey, there are 3 to 4 guys on a nightly basis that are performing. And then you have a handful of other guys that you're hoping that a track record starts to kick in very soon, because it's not really that early anymore. But for the A's, you don't really have that to lean on for sure.
You know, I'm thinking about the Mariners, and obviously it's like, and I was talking to Mark Langston about this last week, how Angels haven't seen you guys, we haven't seen you guys, so it's been a long time. It's kind of weird that in the same division, we've played a ton in the East, ton in the Central, and haven't played the Mariners, because it seemed like every single time we go to Japan, we have you guys. We open every series in Oakland with you guys. It seemed like that for years, so to not see it for a while has been weird. And just preparing for this, knowing that Seattle's lost 7-10, a very tough road trip. You're going to have a quick homestand here, A's, Astros, and then back out on the road for a long road trip, a 9-game trip back on the East Coast. You know, it's still early, but boy, this seems like this is a really important stretch for the rest of the season, if you're going to be in it or not, based off what just happened to you on the road.
First of all, this is not an excuse for the way the Mariners have played, but I do think it's interesting. The Mariners will not play a road game in their time zone until mid-June.
Wow.
Think about that for a second. They will go to, actually, it's later than mid-June. It's at your place, June 21st. Be the first time they play a road game in their time zone. It's been a brutal road schedule for the Mariners. We knew that this month in particular was going to be probably the toughest stretch for the ball club all season long, at least how it looks on paper right now. But it's been one East Coast swing after another. And the trip that they were coming off of, I mean, for perspective, think about this way. You have three at Citi Field against a hot Mets team. You then go north to Toronto against what has been an underperforming lineup, obviously, for the Blue Jays. But we know that is a good team and a team that's built to make the playoffs. And then you have four at Fenway Park. And even though the Red Sox were underperforming when the Mariners hit the road and went to New York, they've obviously gotten hot. Maybe the Mariners are certainly a part of that. But the Mariners, they take two out of three at Citi Field against the Mets. They beat Max Scherzer, by the way. Then you lose two out of three in Toronto. So you go to Fenway Park and you're three up and you're three down. And if you can go, if any team can go 500 on that three-city East Coast swing, I mean, you're excited getting on that plane flying back home. And then the Mariners get swept at Fenway Park in really kind of gut-wrenching fashion. So I would say that even though the Mariners lost a series in Toronto, they went into Boston still with their chins up, saying that, hey, there is a path in front of us to get back home 500 on this road trip. And for a variety of reasons, that did not happen, clearly. And to get walked off in the 10th on a grand slam yesterday, it's kind of like if that happened in game two or even in game three, man, it doesn't feel as bad that in the final game of the series and then get swept and then have to get on a bird and fly 6 hours back home and then play, strap it up and play the next day against the A's. It's been a tough grind.
All right, Julio Rodriguez, I see a slash line last 29 games hitting .321, .368 on base, slug .368. Pretty fantastic. Got his average up to .268. Give us a scouting report, because we haven't seen him yet, and supposedly he is the next all-world guy.
Yeah, I think we're getting to that point right now where we're having to remind ourselves that he's only 21, because he's doing some remarkable things. It was a struggle the first month for Julio, like it would be for any 21-year-old. I mean, he barely has played above high A in the minors. But when you see what he's doing right now, the game's slowing down for him. The strikeouts are coming down. He has massive power, but even in the minor leagues, he hit the ball on the ground a lot. The power is going to be the last thing to come, but he hits the ball hard. He will eventually learn how to hit the ball more consistently in the air. But I'll tell you this much, he's built, I mean, he's 6'4", 235 probably, yoked, and the dude can fly, man. Like, if Elvis Andrews, the book is out on Julio, I'm guessing at this point, but if Julio hits a lazy two-hopper to Elvis, and Elvis just kind of gathers and takes his time before he throws over to first base, like, Julio's going to beat it out. He has plenty of infield singles this year. If you look at the sprint speed metric on Savant, Julio is certainly within the top 10. And at times this year, he's been in the top 5. The guy doesn't look like he can run well. He can fly. I was talking to one of our analysts in the front office, and he was kind of putting himself down, the analyst that is. He said, I can't believe coming into this spring, we did not realize how fast Julio is, because he's only gotten bigger over the last 2 years. He's continued to fill out, and yet he hasn't lost the twitch. He's gotten maybe twitchier and certainly faster. And I think he had a little axe to grind coming into spring this year. Like, he wanted to prove to people that he could play center field. And I think he had that mentality all winter. And he's played a really good center field. He has a very strong arm. He gets good jumps. He can fly, hits the ball incredibly hard. He's got the whole thing, man. He's got the personality. He's got the face. He's got the tools. I mean, he's a billboard franchise guy. And, I heard you guys talking about Kelnick earlier. And obviously the plan for the Mariners this year was Kelnick in right, Julio in center, Mitch Haniger in there as well. Haniger's on the IL, unfortunately. But it was these two young outfielders, two building blocks from the ball club, that this was going to be the year we saw it start to really move forward. And Kelnick, as you referenced, has been optioned down second time in his career, first time this season. I'll say this about both those guys. Who knows where their careers will go, right? It's been a great run for Julio right now. Hopefully that continues. Kelnick has been a struggle. Hopefully he bounces back and becomes the player that he can be. Julio's 21. Kelnick is 22. He'll turn 23 this summer. Adley Rutschman is 24. I think that hopefully helps to put some things in perspective. We know Rutschman just debuted, top prospect in baseball. Like, he just got his toes wet in the big leagues, like, yesterday. And Julio is 3 years younger. Kelnick is a year and a half younger. You know, for some guys, it takes time. And the Mariners are still very confident in Kelnick that that will come around. But they also realize he needs to reset. It was a real struggle. Bad at-bats. He'll be the first to admit it. And him not being here and performing like we saw in that series against you guys at the end of last year, that's been one of the reasons why the Mariners are in the place where they are, because they needed more from Kelnick, and he's got to go back and figure some things out.
And you know what? You're going to see that tonight with the Athletics, with Christian Pache, who came over from the Braves. He started out a little bit hot. Next thing you know, everybody's talking about Willie Mays, and I'm like, whoa, let's see it. Let's see it first. And for the month of May, he's hitting, I think he's hitting .093. It's like, yeah, prospects are great, and guys who are terrific athletes and everything, but in the end, we're a production business, and at this level, you got to produce. And no matter what the prospect label is, once you get here, we only care whether you do good things. So we hope that all these young players, and I say it all the time, I want Pache to succeed. He's supposedly our future. But what do we do with him? We have been hesitant to put him down in AAA, with what you guys have done with Kelnick. And at some point, I'm like, how many offers, how many strikeouts, how many easy outs? You know, when you start to see a guy not compete at this level, you tell me, doesn't it get a little bit scary when you start seeing that night in and night out?
Absolutely. And, I mean, we've seen the Mariners have a couple of young hitters that have just looked overwhelmed, overmatched, right? We saw that from Kelnick. Cal Raleigh, who is starting tonight behind home plate for the Mariners, he was in that boat. They optioned him down. Unfortunately for Cal, who the Mariners clearly thought needed some more time in AAA to get right again, Tom Murphy suffered a really serious shoulder injury, and just days after Cal got optioned down, and then they had to bring Cal Raleigh back up. So I think if the Mariners had it their way, Cal Raleigh would be in Tacoma right now, and Tom Murphy would certainly be one of the starting catchers for the Mariners. They don't have that luxury, unfortunately. So Cal's kind of having to figure things out on the fly here at the big league level. But, yeah, I think we all have watched enough baseball. You can tell when a dude is just overmatched. That's going to happen. It's coming to a lot of young players, especially in the pitching environment that we see today. It's incredibly difficult, man. I don't know how they do it. And this is a really hard time for a young hitter to find success, and which I think makes guys like what Julio Rodriguez and what Jeremy Peña for the Astros are doing so impressive.
You know, one guy I wanted to ask you about is, you forget about the 2020 Rookie of the Year and Kyle Lewis, and he's had the knee problems. I want to say he hurt his knee in a game against the A's. Where are we with him? I believe he's come off the IL. How does he fit into the picture? Because obviously a very dynamic, still young player.
Yes, absolutely right on all those things. There's a chance we see him tomorrow. He's been rehabbing with Tacoma. He played in three straight days leading into today. So Scott Service said he's glass half full. He believes that Kyle Lewis will be in Seattle tomorrow and will be available. He's really, to my knowledge, only DH'd during his rehab stint with the Rainiers. And the Mariners have not, I haven't looked at the numbers recently, but the Mariners have not gotten much production out of their designated hitter position this season. I think it would be unfair to expect Kyle Lewis to come back from another knee injury, being out of Major League Baseball for basically a year, and come back and just rake right away. I mean, maybe you can. We've seen how much of an impact he can make. He's a special talent. He was a Golden Spikes Award winner. He's a first-round draft pick. The dude can play. But it's been a while, right? It's been a while for him to be in a big league batter's box. But I think there's a very good chance, based on what Scott said today, that we see him tomorrow here against the A's.
So you've seen the division forget about us. Oh, actually, you haven't seen the Angels yet. No. But so far,
right.
What do you think of the Astros? And, my God, Verlander looks like he's 26 again. But what do you think of them so far? And actually throwing the Rangers, too.
Two things. One, I knew that the Angels – it's funny. It's funny how, like, some of us – I'm not including any present company, but maybe me. I don't know. It's funny how some of us write off the Angels in spring training when they have two of the top five players in baseball. But we've just seen it too many years in a row, right, where it has not worked for the Angels primarily because of their pitching. But you had to know that if Rendon was Rendon and they got pitching, how dangerous they could be, and we're seeing that from the Angels. And for the Astros, I continue to be kind of overwhelmed by the fact that this might not be true, but it feels this way, how like every young player that comes up for the Astros is good, and yeah. is good basically immediately, right? I mean, it doesn't matter if it's a pitcher, a starter, a reliever. We mentioned Jeremy Peña's name already, a position player. I mean, like Kyle Tucker wasn't great. He wasn't like amazing when he first debuted, but he held his own. He didn't look like he was overmatched, and now he's really, really good. Peña is really good right out of the gates. I just find that remarkable. And for the Mariners, a lot of their plans were kind of based around this idea of the Mariners beginning to crest as the Astros were beginning to descend a little. And by no means am I suggesting that the Mariners thought that the Astros would just fade away into a last place cellar dweller. They would never underestimate a team with that track record like that. But I would be curious to ask with some truth serum if this is what they thought the Astros still would be, right, at this stage in the game, with the Verlander at his vintage still doing what he's doing, with their young players producing like they're producing. Because at least at this point, as we approach Memorial Day, the Astros are still looking like one of the absolute premier powers in the American League, which, man, it's remarkable that run that they've had.
You know, Robbie Ray signed a big deal with you guys, and obviously you were thinking that he comes in, ace for many years. What is it? It's 5 years, 116 mil. What have you thought so far?
I think there's been some frustration for Robbie. He's been bit by one big inning, it seems like most starts, especially recently. There was a lot of discussion about his velocity or lack thereof early in the season. What we've discovered is that Robbie likes it a little warmer, and it isn't too warm in our neck of the woods early on this year. As you know, Robbie wears the scuba suit to pitch, right? Like it is skin tight.
Yeah.
And he's always worked in short sleeves. Well, a few starts ago at home, we saw him working in long sleeves for the first time. In fact, he even threw a bullpen session on long sleeves just so he could figure out what that feels like because he'd never done it before. The velocity started to tick back up again. Like we're seeing more of the Robbie Ray in terms of the stuff, right? Like the swing and miss stuff. Two starts ago, he had a career-high 27 swings and misses, which is pretty impressive to get a career-high when you're not at your best, given what he did last year in terms of the strikeout department, leading baseball in that category. So we're seeing that begin to manifest, which is good. But for him, it's been the big inning that's kind of sunk him in a couple of starts. And unfortunately, the Mariners lineup has scuffled to a degree in this month in particular that if the opposing team hangs five runs, it can be really hard for the Mariners to score six. I mean, it's hard for any big league team to score six runs, especially this year in a single night, but it has been especially so for the Mariners at times this season.
Six runs, what is that? What is that term you speak of?
That's a three-run series for some teams. Or a three-game series, I should say.
Hey, you know what's funny about warm weather? We're not too far away where the teams from the Midwest and the East love coming to Oakland, love coming to Seattle, love getting out of the heat, and can't wait to come to the West Coast for a West Coast swing.
Oh, absolutely. And every time the Rangers, when they had their old ballpark, every time they rolled in here, and I'm sure at your place as well, it was like, I mean, they could actually breathe a little bit. They don't have air conditioning in the dugouts like they do at home.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's like, oh, we go. you know, because they stay in San Francisco. So it's like, oh, you're staying in Seattle, you're staying in San Francisco, the weather, the food. People couldn't wait to come out west. Sometimes when it's a little cold, we forget about that, how good we have it because we're not dealing with it. Hey, always great to talk to you. It's good to see you. It's been a while.
I agree. It's great talking with you guys. Hopefully we get a great series.
Well, we'll talk soon because now we're going to be hooking up a lot for the rest of the season. You take care and have a great call.
All right, you got it, guys. Great talking with you.
Awesome to have him on the program once again. Yeah, our first time seeing the Mariners. I'm so used to, like, Mariners every game. I mean, there was a stretch, I swear to God, we saw them, it felt like we played the Mariners 40-something times a game. I mean, 40-something times a year, not a game. 40-something times a year.
And Felix Hernandez pitched every game.
Every game. Go to Japan, Felix Hernandez. Come back, opening day, Felix Hernandez. It's spring training, it's Felix Hernandez. It was like playing, it would be like the Harlem Globetrotters and the Washington Generals, how you play them every game. It was like, that's how it felt. It felt like we played the same team, and it was always Felix Hernandez on them. I don't know this for a fact, but if I had to bet right now, the team Felix Hernandez faced the most in his career, I would bet it's the Oakland A's.
Okay. Well, now you got me wanting to look.
I'm saying, forget top three. I'm saying we're number one. There's no way he pitched against anybody. One of my best friends, Mark Podesta, people out there may know, I played baseball with him at San Jose State. He used to run Frontier Ford. He now got a dealership down in Southern California. He lives next to Jared Weaver. And I'm like, and his wife was like, oh, yeah, did you ever see Weaver pitch? Oh, yeah, I saw a lot of his career. Weaver might pitch against the A's more than anybody also.
Oh, well, he mentioned Frontier Ford, so I have to play the obligatory. Oh, never mind, I don't have it.
Thank you,
Billy Bean.
Yes, Billy Bean and I both did commercials for Mark, Frontier Ford commercials.
All right, I'm looking up the splits for
Thank you, Billy Bean.
For Felix Hernandez right now. I'm going to give you two numbers while I do that. The number 20, what does that mean? It has something to do with the A's.
It means 20?
Yeah. Number 20, what does that have to do with the A's? I'm not talking about Christian Pache.
I have no idea.
That's how many runs the A's have scored in the last eight games.
Is that what the number Christian Pache is?
Yes.
Number 20?
Yes, but it has nothing to do with him.
I got to tell you, as I get older, I do not care about numbers at all. I don't care if you're 10, 5, 30. It doesn't matter to me.
That's the number of runs the A's have scored in their last eight games.
What is that? 20 and what?
20 runs in their last eight games. That comes out to a 2-6 record.
Okay. Well, you know what? I found this out earlier. Now you know what website this is.
The answer to your question is actually not the A's. It's the Texas Rangers, the Los Angeles Angels, and then the Oakland Athletics.
Wow. I wouldn't have bet that. I mean, I knew we'd had to be top three.
What's his ERA against the A's?
Zero.
No, it's higher than that.
I would say he's like a 2-something.
2.88 career ERA against the A's.
What is he against the Rangers?
He's 19-25 with a 4.20 ERA.
Because he pitched against some good Rangers offenses.
He has five complete games against the Angels. He's 17-18 and a 3.60. 26.
Oh, my God.
26-15 with a 2.88 ERA versus the A's.
Check Jared Weaver. Has he pitched most against the A's?
Pull that one up. One more number for you. The number is 12.
All right. What is it? I'll play your game. What is number 12?
That's the number of straight victories the Mariners have had against the A's.
Thanks.
Yep. I'm breaking down the series.
Have fun with Cody is this segment. So I'm on teamrankings.com. Does this work for – it works for all sports. Because I was trying to figure out in my notes what the hell MLB runs per game trailers. I still don't know what that means.
I'd have to look it up. I've heard that term, but I don't know what it means.
So I looked it up, and it led me to this. And it says MLB team runs per game. Where do the A's rank in runs per game? I don't know if you know this. It's a metric. If you score more runs than the other team, you win. The team you're playing that day, if you score more runs than they do, you win.
I've heard that before. I think
it's a special metric. It's happened to ever. This metric is the oldest metric in the book.
Well, we went through the numbers on the A's batting average, slugging, on base.
Yes, they're 30th in everything.
I would say they're 29th in run score. I know Detroit's really bad offensively.
It is hard to believe Detroit is worse than the A's. But Detroit is, they're averaging 2.75 runs per game. The A's are 3.26. Now, what is the difference? Last year, the A's won 86 games, fell short of the postseason. Last year, the A's averaged 4.59.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
This year, 3.26.
I think this year they're allowing around 4 runs per game. So that shows you how good the pitching's been for the A's.
I didn't even check. As much as I was crapping on the
By the way, Jared Weaver, second most starts ever in his career against the A's. The Rangers are also number one for him. 38 career starts versus the A's. He is 14-11 with a 2.85 ERA versus Oakland.
He really had a good career.
Yeah, he was a really good pitcher.
Yeah, he had a very good career. Wow. It's hard to believe there's teams that their run differential. How bad, okay, just to give you an idea of how bad the A's offense has been, we got to salute the A's pitching. Because the A's pitching this year
has been really good.
For the most part, do you have the overall numbers in the playbook for pitching? Or you just have just hitting?
I have just their hitting, and I have the bullpen. I usually break down the starting pitcher each day.
Okay, so we got to add the overall pitching. The pitching, the bullpen. 3.45 ERA, that's seventh best in the American League. 10 home runs allowed, the bullpen, tied for the second fewest in the AL. They're 11-16 in saves, fourth in the AL. Think about that in saves with the record they've had. I mean, the bullpen's done a good job. For the most part, the starters have done a good job. So the A's run differential right now is at minus 31. So we could basically tell you, you're not going to say Frankie's had a bad year. I mean, the only guy that started to struggle was Dalton Jeffries.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, the guy going tonight, Zach Logue, I love this kid.
Teams can't hit his
changeup. The future Tom Glavine, you heard it here.
Can't hit his changeup or his curveball.
You heard it here. Do you have that in the notes?
Yes.
Cap. Now, no one's, Cap's not going deep, but obviously he was coming off the IL. But whether you're talking Cap, Cole Irvin, Logue, Frankie, who am I missing?
Adrian Martinez was good in his one start that he had.
Yeah, there's somebody I'm
missing. Cole Irvin.
Blackburn, for God's sake.
Oh, yeah, Mr.
How do I forget Blackburn? Blackburn can be an all-star, for God's sakes. So if you're going Frankie, right now, how do you not like the rotation? Frankie, Blackburn, Cap, Cole Irvin, and Zach Logue. I'll take that five. I really – you know how many teams in baseball would take that five?
It's pretty solid, and it's been good. I mean –
That's not the – pitching's not the – you know what the problem is? 261, 250, 249, 201, 213, 222, 215, 210, and 154. By the way, interesting – That's way better than what it has been, the A's lineup. Because if you actually went with some of the different guys that have been going, there's been a lot of guys in the ones.
Yeah, well.
We're not breaking for the show, are we?
Well, yeah, we have some spots to play, and we have to 5:40.
Show's over?
5:40 pregame, man.
We need to talk about doing this show longer. I'm just warming up.
Well, you have another hour for A's Total Access.
Yeah, but that's not a talk show. That's just me kicking it around pregame. This is my life's work right here. This is what it matters.
We also got to get into the you asked me about it the other day, or mentioned to me the teammates. Have we ever seen teammates like Ohtani and Trout? We need to do that tomorrow.
Well, I texted you, but I brought that up in the A's clubhouse. Has there ever been, and I want you to really think about this. We'll do this tomorrow. We're back on at 4, right?
Correct.
We'll do this tomorrow. It's not necessarily about the numbers. It's got to be about how dynamic they are, right? Because I could give you the two Willies right out of the gate. Willie Mays and Willie McCovey, two of the greatest teammates of all time. For God's sakes, they're Hall of Famers. First ballot William McCovey had to have been a first ballot Hall of Famer, right?
You would think
sometimes you don't know. Joe DiMaggio wasn't a first ballot. There's some guys, for some reason, he had to have been. 500 home runs.
Let's see. William McCovey. He was on 346 at 425 ballots. Who didn't vote for him?
I don't know.
Like, whatever. We did this.
But were they must-see?
Well, television was still kind of in its infancy back then.
They didn't even draw fans at Candlestick Park. I mean,
fact.
Were these – so it's not just about pure numbers. Dynamic duos. Did you get that?
Yes, dynamic duos.
You remember who the dynamic duo?
I don't remember.
Batman? Batman and Robin?
Batman, you're talking about Adam West and Burt Young? Is that who played Robin?
Burt Ward. The great Burt Ward. Wow.
With Pow and Bang and Zoom and
yeah,
all that.
Yeah, that was – when I was a kid, the real Batman show was the best.
Burgess Meredith playing the Joker.
Oh, Cesar Romero was the Joker.
Oh, the who played
– Frank Gorshin was the Riddler.
Okay,
they're all comedians.
Yeah.
Burgess Meredith was the Penguin.
The Penguin.
Oh, the good old days. I'm going to end on that. We're back tomorrow at 4 o'clock. Stick around in a few minutes. A's Total Access brought to you by Chevron. We want to thank the great Paul Himbikides from ESPN.
I was going to promote who we have tomorrow.
And Aaron Goldsmith from Mariners Television. TV play-by-play.
We're going to have Buster Olney tomorrow.
Oh, the great Buster Olney.
We'll see how many questions we go without asking about the Yankees.
You know what? We're going to do that. We're not asking you one about the Yankees.
Dan O'Dowd from MLB Network, your guy. You asked for, and I delivered.
I love Dan O'Dowd. I mean, I'm going to have to gush and just be – you're my favorite.
I mean, I know
– Do you think he remembers us from San Diego? Is he going to be on video?
I think it's just going to be a phone with Dan. I mean, I could try, but it's going to be 9:30 in the morning, so I don't think so.
Oof. Getting up early. All righty, everybody. We'll see you back tomorrow right here on A's Cast Live.
The Coliseum has gone by many names, but none better than The Last Dive Bar. Hi, everyone. Ken Korak here, and my friends at Last Dive Bar are helping us celebrate our longtime home. Last Dive Bar has the most unique merchandise for all Oakland baseball fans. T-shirts, sweatshirts, the Ray Fosse line, and my personal favorite, the lights have taken full effect. Visit their website at lastdivebar.com or follow them on social media at Last Dive Bar. All proceeds are invested back into the A's Community Fund and their affiliated charities. Go to lastdivebar.com. That's Last Dive Bar.
This has been a presentation of the Oakland Athletics.